You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy, bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Connor O'Gara joins us Saturday down south. SEC championship game tomorrow. Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. It's Georgia, Alabama. How are you, Connor? Good. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. I know it's going to be a busy time for you on the eve of such a big game. Appreciate it.
No, yeah, good to be here. It's kind of crazy considering the last week or so that's been in college football. It's a little bit lost in the shuffle, but a monumental game in Atlanta, as they always seem to be. And yeah, I'm excited for Saturday. It feels like we've been building to this for the last month now since we knew what the matchup was going to be.
We were talking earlier about the last time we felt Nick Saban was an underdog going into an SEC title game or a playoff game or even a bowl game. And we were kind of tossing around some old games back in the day. Forget the line for a second. How much of an underdog do you feel this Alabama team really is against Georgia?
A significant one. Yeah, I mean, let's think about this. Like, we're talking about an Alabama team that had 6 of 8 games in SEC play that were one-score games in the fourth quarter. This is not a vintage dominant Alabama team, and I think Nick Saban knows it. They've been telling us all year. I even go back to that Florida game where that was a game where they barely were able to hang on there. Who knows if a 2-point conversion goes differently there. And they've kind of been winning these close games in which they play down to their competition. That's what they do. Georgia's the exact opposite. Georgia's the team that hasn't led by anything less than 14 points in a fourth quarter with Stetson Bennett as the starter. Now, I know the Clemson game happened. That was with JT Daniels, but man, ever since then, it's kind of been like, wow, this team, this thing is really efficient. It looks like nobody can score against this defense. They haven't allowed more than 17 points in a game. They trailed for only 20 minutes and 1 second all year. These teams are opposites, and Alabama has a significant disadvantage up front at the line of scrimmage. Their offensive line should get dominated by Georgia's front, but do cosmic forces keep this game close? That's the question that everybody has, because every way you look at it on paper, you would say Georgia's a significant favorite to be able to win this one and finally get over the hump in Atlanta.
Is there any psychological advantage? We were tossing around this idea earlier, too, that, you know, Saban has a way of preparing his teams, but he also has the advantage of reminding his team they're Alabama, as reminding their team that this is kind of what they're always supposed to do, go to the SEC title game. Kirby Smart can't really say that. Like, Nick Saban can say, look at all of the championships we won. Is there anything like that that could be in play, despite what the X's and O's would say, that could help this team mentally know, hey, look, this program goes to SEC title games. It's just what we do all the time.
Yeah, and especially if it's close. That's what I think is the real key. Like, you know, all that stuff might go out the window, and I think Alabama will show up ready to go. But if Georgia kind of handles that punch and it ends up being maybe like a 3-score game in the second half, then that's advantage Georgia. But if this is close down the stretch, if this is a 1-score game, how can you not think about all those things? How can you not think about the fact that Kirby Smart has had 3 second-half leads against Nick Saban and has blown all of them, and he's been outscored in the fourth quarter 31-0? Like, how can that not go through your head if you're Georgia? Now, those are different players, all right? Like, this is a pretty different team, I think, than the team that lost the SEC championship 2018, and we're going to see kind of how they respond to this. But yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for that. And Alabama has just found a way this year. I mean, they did last week against Auburn when it seemed like everything was kind of working against them. So I think advantage Alabama if it's close. And I think that they're going to come out ready to go and knowing that, look, this is what it all comes down to. I think their season depends on it.
Sometimes you see a team really struggle and it's an outlier, but sometimes it brings up to a larger issue that's plagued them all season. What happened to Alabama against Auburn? No offensive line protection, couldn't run the ball. Were those things that were prevalent a number of times during the season that you could predict something like that, or was that just coming out of nowhere?
Yes and yes. So you could see issues like that. And they've had issues on the offensive line, especially on the right side. Right tackle has been an issue for them all year. But it's not just that. I mean, they've had discipline issues, too. I mean, here Alabama is with over 100 penalty yards early in the fourth quarter in a game that, you know, like, they're favored by 3 scores, and it just doesn't really matter. So we've seen that kind of play out. And without Jameson Williams, who was ejected for targeting in the second quarter for a hit he made on punt coverage of all things, you saw this team really struggle to have those scoring drives. And I think that that's something that, you know what, this is just who Alabama is at this point. That's not changing all of a sudden overnight against Georgia. And I think that to expect Alabama to kind of put its foot on the gas and really look the part against Georgia would be, I think that'd be ambitious. This isn't exactly a get right team in terms of defenses that all of a sudden you're going to figure it out against. So, yeah, I mean, they've been telling us this all year. They have issues. They haven't been able to run the football. 105th in the country in rushing in the month of November. And now they're down to one healthy scholarship running back with Trey Sanders. So I think they have their issues, and it's just a matter of whether or not they can overcome them.
It seems like that's what people have been saying this week. It's like, look, if you're going to try to figure out what's wrong with your offense, going up against Georgia really isn't the week to be doing that.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I can't imagine trying to do that for 60 minutes against that group.
When, right.
You know, they can get pressure with three or four. I mean, that's what's really made the difference all year. We're thinking, all right, maybe Tennessee can kind of expose some things. And with the exception of that first drive, I mean, they really didn't. Tennessee went 53 minutes in between touchdowns in that football game, and they weren't able to test them on the outside in the way that some were kind of wondering about. So now Alabama is going to try and do that. That's their only play. Can they get Jameson Williams over the top? Can they finally maybe buy some time for Bryce Young, given the protection issues? Can they do that against this Georgia front, which has just been so good at getting quarterbacks? And when they scramble outside of the pocket, that's usually when you see a Channing Tindall or a Nolan Smith kind of take over, pin their ears back, and they're able to get a quarterback down. And that's what I think a lot of people are expecting to see in this one.
Yeah, you kind of touched on my next question, which is Bryce Young. Does he have that sort of extra thing that quarterbacks sometimes need to do? It's like, well, this ain't working, but I'm going to make something work. Like kind of like what Johnny Manziel used to do. I know he's not Johnny Manziel, but sort of on that same level where it's like, you know what, let me just run around and I'll figure it out as I go.
He does, and you kind of have to take the good with the bad. He's going to do those one or two things every single game where Saban's going to pull him on the sideline. He's going to say, you can't take that sack. You can't run 15 yards backwards when we're in the red zone and we're trying to make a field goal here. We can't have that. Like that's just kind of going to happen with a player of his caliber. I think he's got some Russell Wilson in him in that fashion. But I think what makes him so special and so unique is that you see the boys. He always keeps his eyes downfield. He gets flushed out of the pocket. He's not necessarily looking to make plays beyond the line of scrimmage. It's a little bit Baker Mayfield-esque in the way that he kind of scrambles to be able to set his feet and then kind of square his shoulders and get his body really into a throw downfield. And that's what he does well. Can he do it well against this Georgia team that, I mean, they've got 360-pound Jordan Davis who can pursue you in the open field here. So I don't think that's a given. But, man, if there's anybody who can try and make it happen, I would think it's Bryce Young.
In terms of Alabama, how much did that Auburn game it was great the way they won it, but, boy, they did not look the part for a long time. Has hurt their chances of, man, if this game comes down to a field goal or if this game goes in overtime, maybe a two-loss Alabama can squeeze in. Does the Auburn game hurt that narrative at all?
No, it's the whole season that hurts that narrative. I mean,
so this was not really an option no matter what happened Saturday.
No, I've been saying for weeks, I don't think Bama gets in with two losses. And unless it's pure and total chaos, like the Kirk Herbstreit chaos scenario that he threw out there, I don't think a close loss does it. I mean, even go back to Georgia 2018. I realize this is different. We're talking about different circumstances here, but Georgia was that one-loss team back in 2018, and they blow the late lead. Jalen Hurts comes in, saves the day, and everybody's like, hey, Georgia's definitely one of the best four teams in the country. You got to put them in the playoff, right? With two losses, they lose a conference championship. He's like, no, that's not the way that this works. They don't put two lost teams into the playoff to begin with, much less one that doesn't even win their own conference. And Alabama has played down to its competition. So I don't think Alabama gets in without that win against Georgia. But if they beat Georgia, they should get the one seed. I mean, that's the crazy thing we're talking about. No Power 5 undefeated teams. But, yeah, it feels like it's all or nothing for the Tide.
No, I agree with you. If they win that game, they are the number one seed going into the playoff. But I think you're right. And if that should – if a close game puts Alabama in, I think the committee would have to really explain why. If you have a one-loss Oklahoma State, for example, that's not going in, or Notre Dame's not going in, or whoever gets left out in that process.
Yeah, and like, here's the thing is that, you know, what would Bama's second best win be? A 7-point home win against an 8-4 Arkansas team? Look, Arkansas is a good football team, they are, but I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Like, Bama doesn't have these bevy of top 15 wins. If Baylor beats Oklahoma State this weekend, a two-loss Baylor team is going to have a conference championship, and it's going to have three wins against the current top 15, if you include that BYU win, if you include the Oklahoma win, which was, oh, by the way, by double digits. So I look at those things and I say, Alabama just does not have the resume. The selection committee has been telling us, look, they're not even the top one loss team. We put Ohio State ahead of them. We put Michigan ahead of them. I think they've been trying to tell us Alabama needs to win to make the field.
All right. I do need to ask you about Brian Kelly going to LSU. Just from an SEC perspective, what is he walking into? How much is the cupboard left open bare? What is he getting with the Tigers in 2022?
Yeah, I've been saying that. I think that Scott Woodward is like Ham Porter from Sandlot, and he makes bigger splashes than him. That's what he does, and all he did was drain the whole pool by hiring Brian Kelly. I mean, this is a move that can benefit LSU for the next decade plus. I know people look at that age, they say he's on the wrong side of 60. He's a darn good football coach who has learned how to recruit at a difficult place to do that at Notre Dame, a more difficult place than we probably realize given the academic restrictions, the geographical restrictions. And I think that he's going to be able to be the fourth LSU coach to win a national championship there in the 21st century. The cupboard's not going to be bare. I mean, the guy had one five-star recruit on his roster at Notre Dame. The guy had two five-star commits just sitting right there, even though LSU hasn't even had a coach for the last 2 months. The talent disparity between Notre Dame and LSU, I mean, we see it year after year when Notre Dame gets to the playoff. I think he's going to be able to do even more with that talent, and I would not necessarily doubt his ability to win, even though it's kind of a foreign region for him. And if you saw the video last night, he's at least doing his best to try and fit in his new Southern
game. Yeah, right. We saw that. We were just talking about that earlier this hour. Would say this for Scott Woodward. He did the one thing no one else has been able to do for over a century. He got a sitting Notre Dame coach to leave South Bend on his own terms to take another job in college football. That's pretty remarkable.
It is. I mean, that's what Scott Woodward does. Like he wants the big fish. He's not necessarily gonna settle. He swings for the fences. He's not shortening up and trying, go the opposite way and get a base hit. He's two strikes down 0-2. He's swinging for the fences. He doesn't care if it gets out there that he was after this coach or that coach, whatever. He's gonna go out. He's gonna make a big time splash. That deal's gonna be worth well north of $100 million. And if it wins LSU a national championship, I don't think anybody there is gonna really care.
Yeah, I agree completely. Connor, thank you again for joining us. I know it's gonna be a busy weekend for you. We appreciate you taking time to join us. Appreciate it as always.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man.
You got it. Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. If you are interested in SEC athletics, especially on the football side of things, great, great website. They do a fantastic job. They cover that conference like nobody's business. Progressive Guest Line, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer only at progressive.com. As we continue with Wake Up Call.